This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
I want to say life-changing, but it's more life-affirming. Actually, I've met some lovely, lovely people through OTI, some that I just know are going to be friends for life. I've had some amazing inspiration from OTI. I have rediscovered the things that I love doing, and it's blissful. And I know it's been hard, and I know I'm not there yet, and I know it's only a year, but I am so looking forward to year two, year three, year four. And I want to come back and say to you, yep, year two, year three, year four. And it's been even better.
It's a cracker, this week's episode. Joining us on the podcast, you've just heard a little bit there, is Stuart Reeves, who is from Battle in East Sussex. Stuart is a community member. He's more than a year alcohol free. He has got so much to share. He talks about his career as a teacher, the fact he's now retired, the impact his not drinking has had on his life, his family. We ask him if it's been life-changing, but, well, you'll hear for yourself. Stuart's words, it's been life-affirming. It's a cracking episode. Let's get into it.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Laura. I am a community member of OTI. I've been here since I was 34 days alcohol free. I'm now 8 months, and that is probably mostly down to OTI. The community, that support that you get through doing the Zooms. I do a few a week. I post in the forum and interact in the forum as well. I've made some amazing friends. I wasn't what you would call an alcoholic, but I definitely felt like life was becoming unimaginable without alcohol. Every weekend was about going for drinks, having drinks with a meal, that sort of thing. And I just hated that control that alcohol was starting to have over me. So I started to question it, started listening to the podcast. Before I knew it, I joined the community, and I really didn't realize how much of a hold alcohol had until I stopped doing it. Being part of OTI helps me to navigate life without alcohol, and that's as simple as I can put it, really. I would urge anyone to join the community.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's ace to have you listening. We say it every single week. Genuinely, we love the fact that you listen, and we're not really bothered sort of where you are on your alcohol-free journey. You might be sober, you might be curious, you might still be drinking. Thank you for listening. We literally couldn't do it without you. Quick introductions as to who we are, because we're dead excited today, because we love it when we get a community member joining us on the podcast. And today, that's who you are going to be listening to. So, in a nutshell, my name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I am 50 years old and I'm 6 years sober. And never meant to be here, but I'm really glad I am. Took a break from the booze and still not drinking 6 years down the line. People say, how much did you drink? How bad did it get? Blah, blah, blah. I drank too much, too quickly and far too often. And we're really, really passionate about sharing with you the changes that can occur, the stuff that can happen. And today's guest is going to be a flipping great example of all that. I said I'd keep it brief. I'm wanging on. Ben, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Hello, I'm Ben. I'm 36. I live in Liverpool. I'm currently right in the middle of Liverpool city centre because I'm still at work. If you are one of our community members on this Zoom watching, I don't have bright pink walls at home. This was a decision that was made by someone in the BBC, I imagine, many years ago, and it's still here. Isn't it dreadful? What terrible colours.
He's putting me off a little bit, but anyway, we've got to go with it.
But you know, just to also clarify, I'm not doing it. It is now 6 p.m. as we record this. I'm not doing this within work hours. I've just had a long day, but I couldn't miss this, Stuart, because I absolutely love our community member podcast recordings, because it's just, we've seen your journey and we've seen you, you know, slipping down Scarfell Pike in terrible rain. We've seen your fabulous Fulham Post. I'm getting distracted. I'm Ben, 36, Liverpool. Gave up alcohol 4 years ago. Love it when we got a community member on. Chaz, back to you. I'm all over the place.
It's fine. I think it's the pink walls. It's sending you sideways.
It is. It's horrible.
It is. Just take a moment. I'll introduce Stuart. You take a breath. Everything will be okay. As Ben said there, it just warms our cockles massively when somebody from the community, their lives change in front of our eyes. And this is what has happened with today's guest. It's Stuart Reeves. He's from Battle in East Sussex, and he is just over 1 year alcohol free. Stuart Reeves, welcome to the podcast. First question, how the hell are you?
I'm really well. Thanks, Chaz. Thanks, Ben. Loving the pink walls, by the way. I'm really, really well. It's the second week of half-term holiday here, so I'm especially chilled. So I've been off for a week and a bit. And my eldest is back from uni, so we've just had the one most wonderful family time together. And I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. There's so much to talk about what has occurred over the last 12 months. Before we get into it all, can I just ask you a really daft question?
Please.
Like, did you expect to be here? And I just want to paint a little bit of a picture for anybody that's not a community member that listens to the podcast. On this call, we have got a whole host of community members that have come on to listen to your story today, to celebrate your sobriety. Could you have imagined even being here on this recording like 12 months ago with all these people who have now become your friends?
Not at all. When I first heard of OTI and when I first listened to the podcast, I didn't dream for a minute that I would actually be here doing one of these podcasts. Somebody mentioned it about, I don't know, maybe a couple of months ago, and I think they dropped the idea in then. And then when you asked me, I thought, yes, I've definitely got to do this. I've definitely got to. And I think it's a couple of things. It's about celebrating your own part of your story, but also if you can inspire somebody else, then the way other people inspired me, if I can do that for just one other person, then I'd be really, really happy. So no, I couldn't have imagined it.
Well, we're chuffed a bit. So thank you so much. Ben, do you want to jump in? I know we've got loads we want to ask.
Well, my friend Sharon has written a book, Stuart. I'm not sure if you've heard. It's called...
I've ordered it. I've already ordered it.
You've ordered it. How many copies, by the way?
Oh, only one copy. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I've got 10 on the way.
You mean this one here in my house?
Yes, the one. You've always got a copy very close to hand. And it's called The Life-Changing Magic of Quitting Alcohol. Now, there are a lot of people who remove alcohol, and just that act itself, you know, it kind of, I didn't realise this, and actually I feel this way. I think what you have done since removing alcohol is that you've taken very proactive steps. You've thought through what you want to do, where you want to go. Your life is very proactively changing because you've removed alcohol and you've decided, right, it's almost where do we start with this? But can you tell us, like when I say that to you, can you explain what I mean by those very kind of big decisions that you're on the front foot with because you remove booze?
Wow, that's a huge question. There is so much to cover, but I mean, the benefits that I have seen, within the first 3 months, my blood pressure went from in the red zone to in the green zone. And that's without doing anything else, without doing any exercise, without changing my diet or anything like that. I couldn't believe those immediate changes. So that was the first thing. Then I started to lose weight. I've lost 2 stone, in a year. It's not dramatic, but, the real small changes that I put into my own lifestyle through diet and exercise, have made a massive difference. So I've gone from a 38 waist to a 34 waist. My belt size has just changed again this week. So these are just some of the immediate things. And then, joining Ian's diet and exercise Zoom. Brilliant. Big shout out to Ian, by the way. He's an absolute legend. We love Ian. And then just thinking about my own diet, trying to move to plant-based, making sure that I put in as many whole foods as possible. I've always loved growing my own food. That's taken off massively this year. And I used to have quite a few allergies as well to all sorts of various things. I've got quite bad skin conditions and rosacea and that kind of stuff. And they've all gone. They've all gone. And how does that happen? How do your allergies just suddenly disappear? And I just feel as though there's just so many positive changes to my own mental and physical health. And I've only just started. That's just 1 year. There's just more. I just know there's more to come. And I just find it dead exciting. So I don't quite know how to put all of that into just one kind of quick sentence, Ben. But that's just the sort of initial feelings that I have, and the initial changes, the initial benefits that I have seen, and it is most definitely the life changing magic of quitting alcohol. Shaz, that's what it is.
Stuart, available on pre-order.
Absolutely. I've just been to my local bookshop and ordered it, and
no
way. I have.
We've OMG!
We've got a local independent bookshop, and we've got this. He gave some work experience to my eldest, and I've always gone into this shop, and I've said to him, "Have you got this book?" He said, "Yeah, no problem." And we've got this deal going on that whenever I go in and buy a book from him, I shout really loud. That was quicker than Amazon to all the
Brilliant.
Customers in the shop, and I do it every time, so it was great. So
thank you. Thank you so much. That is massively, massively appreciated. Mm. Stuart, you are a member of Over the Influence. You started listening to the podcast. Before you got involved as a community member and started listening, what brought you to us? How did you find us? And where were you at as a drinker? And only ever share as much as you're comfortable with.
Yeah. So I found OTI around about this time last year. I was in an MRI scanner at the time, and I was just feeling a bit sorry for myself. And I've got this massive knee problem. This scanner was buzzing around, going round and round and round. I was composing a note to a work colleague who said to me, she's going to try sobriety. And I composed this note. And it was like, I'm really impressed with what you're doing. I mean, first of all, somebody telling her boss that they're going to stop drinking. There's still a stigma attached to talking about it at work. So I was really impressed with her for doing that. I composed this note in my head about, you're doing a great thing. You've got, I'm absolutely 100% behind you. I'll support you at work and make sure that whoever you want to tell, that I say that I know. And so it's a really brave thing you're doing. I said, you'll be better off financially, health-wise, and any decisions you want to make, you'll be clearer about them, et cetera, et cetera. And as I was composing this note, I said to myself, shit, that's what I want. I want all of the things I've just said that you're going to have. I want those things, and I want them for me. And I've been curious for a while. And I spoke to her and I said, look, I think I want to do this as well. And she said, well, why don't we do it together at work? So that was the deal. Then she said, don't do it on your own, though. It's really difficult to do something like this on your own. She tried it before and struggled. She said, you need a community around you. And she sent me a podcast. I can't remember which one it was. And I listened to it and I was hooked straight away. And then from then on, it was back to back listening twice a day, three times a day. I just felt so inspired by the stories. Some of them were actually telling my story. Some of them weren't, but there was something from every single podcast. There was something positive to take, and it just made me want it more and more and more. So that's how I found OTI, and I'm so glad that I did.
Stuart, can I ask, are you happy to talk about work and the decision you made there? Okay, cool. Stuart, you do know that you've got an OTI nickname developed.
Oh, go on.
Wise Stuart.
Wise Stuart, I love it.
I love that.
I love it. Wise Stuart. All I want is to when I kind of, when I'm old, I just want to go, one word, just Ben was, he's wise. That's all I want. I want to just pick up on, so when I said about taking very active steps in terms of kind of where you want to go next, I was referring to your 365 days post that you put in the forum a couple of weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks today that you hit?
Yeah.
365.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Let me just read this bit out to you, because it's fabulous, and it's had so many comments on this post. How best to celebrate is what this post is called. So pleased and proud to be hitting 365 days this week. What better way to celebrate than to hand in my notice of work? I'm taking control and finally removing one of the key triggers for my previous drinking, stressful work. After 33 years in education, I've decided to take early retirement, take a short break, then reinvent myself, or rather, rediscover my old self. No fixed idea what I'm going to do, but it's exciting and something will turn up. Of that, I'm certain. I would not have had the clarity of thought and the courage to do what's right for me if I was still befuddled by booze. It doesn't get much bigger than that, does it, Stuart?
It doesn't. And this is one of the realizations that I think I've had for a while, but dropping the alcohol has really cleared my mind. It's really cleared my heart, and it's really made me think, what is it that I want to do? It's made me revisit a couple of younger traumas as well, one childhood, one slightly older, sort of teenage or early 20s, I think it was. And I suddenly realized, or dropping the booze has helped me suddenly realize, what I've been doing for the past 40 years is hiding everything, dumbing down everything, and unable to manage with any of those emotions. So just taking the work issue first of all, teaching is a stressful job. There's no doubt about it. It is a stressful job. You never know what you're going to get. It's also the most rewarding job you could ever have, and it's also the most soul destroying job that you can ever have as well. And sometimes you can have both of those emotions in the same day. I've always wanted to help people. I've always felt that I've got quite a lot to offer to people. I've always been a good listener. I think I'm a good coach. I know I'm a good coach, and I've just comes to the realization that after 33 years, it takes its toll, and it's really, really difficult work. So I feel as though I've done my bit. The fact that I don't know what I'm going to do doesn't bother me. I know that something will come up, and I think that's I'm not anxious about that. I think that's a new feeling as well. I'm really calm. I'm quite sort of stoic about stuff. All the anxieties that I would have had through drinking have just vanished. And I just feel so ready to go and do something else that will be the rest of my life. So that's the work side of it. In terms of the other stuff that I used to hide, and you know, I hope this isn't a trigger for anybody else, but my dad left when I was 7 years old. There was an argument. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't even know why, but they split up, and my mum tells stories of me sat on a sofa, looking out the window, waiting for him to turn up, waiting for him to come back. And he would say, oh yeah, I'll come and pick you up on Saturday. We'll go out, and then not turn up. And, you know, she was in tears, and I said, why are you crying? You know, I didn't understand, because I was only about 7 years old. And then the same thing happened with my stepdad when I was 21 and I was at university. So the two biggest role models, the two biggest male role models in my life that should be my, you know, the people that I look up to, both let me down big time. And I think I was angry for years and years and years. And I don't think I understood my anger. Nobody told me you need help. Nobody told me you need to see a therapist or anything like that. And I think in those days, it was probably still quite a lot of stigma attached to mental health. So I was really angry, and drinking was the thing that helped me. And going back to what I said earlier about podcasts and listening to them back to back, Justin B. Long was the one who said, alcohol was my solution. And, yeah, you know, it was my solution. It took away all those feelings of feeling betrayed and rejected by the two male role models in my life that should have known better, actually, and should have done better. And so you put all that together, and I've dealt with all of that in the last 12 months. I think I'm still dealing with it. I think you learn to manage it, but I think I'm dealing with all of that so much better than trying to hide it with a drink. Don't get me wrong, that's not easy. And dealing with those emotions, those raw emotions, is like, whoa, it hits you like a truck. But my determination to deal with it and reframe my any negative thoughts that I have and think, right, how do I reframe these into something more positive? And what is it that I can do either for myself or for somebody else to make things just a bit better for people? And, you know, my family is the obvious first port of call.
I said that you're developing a nickname, Why Stuart, which is being used more and more. Apparently, Emma's just put in the chat box here, there's a hashtag for Stuart too. Hashtag, be more Stuart.
that's Neil, that is. Where is he? I can't see him on the screen. Neil Curtis.
Well, he's just put in, what a wonderful human you are.
This community is full of wonderful humans, and they bring out the best in other people. Sorry, I've got a bit of a snotty nose here.
It's all right. You have a sniff, don't you worry.
Deal the back end of a cold.
The question was about, you know, in terms of taking those big decisions, you know, and you know, looking at that post that you put in the forum, like the thing that really jumped out at that for me is that this is a huge decision that you're making. You know, you've done something for years and years. You're obviously very, very good at it. And now you're making the decision, right, I'm not going to do that anymore. But I think that the bit that I was kind of in awe of was actually, I'm not sure what's coming next, but I know that this is the right thing. And I think the confidence to do that, and also the acknowledgement that you wouldn't be making this decision probably had you not removed alcohol.
I think you're probably right. I don't think I would have made the decision so soon if I was still drinking. And don't forget, drinking was hiding all the stress that I was under. And it is a very stressful job. But what's more important than your own mental health, than your own physical health? I think once you realise that is more important than anything else, and you've got something that you can control, something that is within your control, then why not? Why would you not? So when I got to that kind of logic, there was no two ways about it. I just had to spend, I think I spent about 6 or 8 months thinking, right, okay, what are the financial situation? What's the financial implications of this? And actually that was the only consideration. There was no other consideration. I did a whole kind of SWOT analysis of, you know, why am I doing this? What are the strengths and weaknesses around these decisions? But the opportunities box was just massive. You know, I could do this, I could do that, I could do the other. So I'm going to take a month off. I'm retiring in April. I'm going to take a month off. I've already had people knocking on my door saying, oh, when you're retired, I've got a bit of work for you. And I said, I don't want anything at the moment. I don't want to commit myself to anything. I'm going to pick and choose what I want to do. And I've got some ideas about that. Some of it goes back to childhood hobbies, which I know is a common theme throughout the community, you know, people rediscovering childhood hobbies. I've been a coach for 20 years, and I think there's a massive gap right now in men's mental health coaching. And I want to give something back, but I don't quite know what that looks like at the moment. But I do feel that there's something I can give back. I would find that really rewarding. I want to work a few days a week. You know, teachers' pensions are really, really good. I know teachers moan about their work. They shouldn't, because the pension's probably the best in the country at the moment, that and an NHS pension. So we really shouldn't moan, but we do have a bit of a moan, and you get 13 weeks a year holiday. So actually there's nothing to moan about, really. I've always been the sort of person that makes something positive out of a negative, which is why I find it quite easy to reframe negative emotions. I've always been somebody that tries to find the best out of a situation. And I've always been somebody who's never, ever feared. I don't want to call it failure, but you know what I mean if I say failure. And it's something I've always tried to teach in every child that's come through my classroom, that it's okay. It's okay to get it wrong. It doesn't matter, because there's something in learning through all of that. But unfortunately, the societal norms in this country are that you don't get things wrong, that actually you do get your GCSEs and you do get your A levels and you do well at this and you do well at that, when actually it should be around how do we live our lives. We have to deal with so much stuff that comes at us from all sorts of different directions. Wouldn't we be better off teaching our youngsters how to manage those situations in a better way, rather than rote learning of stuff? It really gets me, and it's a big issue I've had throughout my whole career in teaching, that there's too much rote learning of stuff, and that doesn't teach you anything. It teaches you some things, and it teaches you how to deal with something that perhaps cognitively you couldn't cope with before. But there is so much more that we should be doing, and that happens too late. And I see too many young people fail, and then fail, and then fail again. And then suddenly they find their passion in something. We should be identifying that so much earlier.
Were you always this sort of calm and considered and level-headed? I mean, just listening to you speak now, even the tone of your voice, you sound like you've got your shit together. Do you know what I mean? You're at this level. And, you know, in my experience, when I think back to what I was like as a drinker, I was up here, like on the roof, you know, emotions all over the show. Now, you know, we talk about the calm, don't we, that you feel, and the clarity, and it just, everything just comes down a peg or two. Were you always like this, or has this come in sobriety?
I think I've always been like this. I think drinking made me less like this, and I think I've refound this. And I'm just reminded of a few kind of things that people have said to me, some other wise people that have said to me. One of them is always be kind to people. You never know what horrors are going on in their lives, whatever you might think of them. But, you know, just be kind. You don't have to be horrible to people. I've also found that listening is really, really important, and active listening is really, really important. And some of the techniques I've since learnt the theory of around active listening and coaching and how you convince somebody that you are listening, I've been using quite naturally. I'm from a very large family. I'm one of five. My mum's one of eight. I've got 30 or 40 cousins. I can't even tell you how many there are. And so I've always been around people. So I think my emotional intelligence is really, really high. And I think that's also helped me with managing my own emotions as well. In fact, it's interesting, when I appoint people at work, two of my biggest questions, one of them is, what do you understand by emotional intelligence? And from your definition, how would you rate your own emotional intelligence out of 10? And where 7 isn't a number. I always say where 7 isn't a number. And then the other one is about resilience, and tell me a time in your life, at work or otherwise, where you've had to show true resilience. And for me, those two questions mean the world in terms of employing really, really good teachers for our young people. You put somebody like that in front of a group of young people and everybody thrives. So I think I've always enjoyed being like that. And I think most of it is quite natural. But when you realize the power of it and some of the theory behind it, to practice it even more is actually quite rewarding. So I do get a lot of joy out of being calm. Don't get me wrong, I can be as mad as you like in certain situations, and it can change, and I can be really down as well. But on the whole, I'm known as the voice of reason in the family. So I think I take it as a positive that I'm known as wise Stuart. That's lovely. It's a nice thing to hear.
Love it. Okay, then. So just picking up on what you've just said, talking about emotional intelligence and resilience in your alcohol-free journey, apply it to the last 12 months and share maybe something with us where you have been resilient. Because, you know, we always say, yeah, of course, sobriety is really, really, really good. It's so much better than drinking. But we always have like a big asterisk above that, a big disclaimer. And you've touched upon, the traumatic events in your life and what you've had to deal with in sobriety as well. And we quite often don't realise any of this is sort of below the surface once we've removed the alcohol. So you do have to be emotionally intelligent. You do have to show resilience, don't you? So it's not all sweetness and light, is it? So what would you say to that?
It's not all sweetness and light. And I think I've had to show some real resilience in this alcohol-free journey. You used the J word first, by the way, not me. Aww. So that's fine. I was determined not to. But you do have to be resilient. And, you know, every day when you're looking at the app where people are posting stuff, or even in the WhatsApp groups, you can see that people are struggling with that resilience, and they just need a little bit of encouragement here or there. And I've lent into that as well. When you're feeling particularly low, or you're feeling like there's a craving, and it's about all the techniques that I've heard through all the podcasts about playing it forward. And I just keep asking myself the same question: to what extent do I want X, Y, or Z? And if I really want it, then you're in control of it. So why don't you go out and get it? I'm not saying, you know, if I wanted to be an astronaut, I could go and be an astronaut. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about being an average person. And I think we underplay that word in our society as well. The word average has got negative connotations. There's nothing wrong with being average, actually. It's a bloody good thing to be like a really, really good person. So yeah, I've had to be resilient. You know what it's like when you're perhaps white knuckling it a little bit and not leaning into the community, and perhaps not putting in alternatives or going to, you know, the triggers, keeping away from the triggers in those early days, and recognizing that you need to be more resilient, and recognizing, okay, so I wasn't resilient in that situation. Just stop and evaluate and just consider what it is you did do, what it is you didn't do, and what is within your power to control and to do better next time. You know, I'm not one for setting targets, but I do like a target of try and be better than you were yesterday, in whatever that means, in whichever way that means. It doesn't mean that yesterday was crap. It might be that yesterday was really, really good, but how could you be even better today? So, it's a really interesting question coming from education as well. How to teach resilience? It's really difficult. You can't just say, we're going to have a lesson today on how to be resilient. You can't do that. You have to take somebody's personal situation and actually coach them through what they wanted to get, what they would have preferred the outcome to be. And I do this with my kids. They hate it. Dad, stop coaching me. Just tell me what to do, please. But it's like, so what do you want from that situation? How would you have preferred it to have gone? And what is it you could do next time? And I just feel you get the most out of people, and you can self-coach. I do believe you can self-coach. You can teach yourself how to be resilient. Emotional intelligence. I think I've always had an issue writing and reading. I've always been a slow reader. I've always been a slow writer. I think my communication when I do write is really, really strong, really good. But I've got this feeling somewhere along the line that there might be some kind of underlying issue there. So I've always read faces. I've always been able to look in somebody's face and think, hang on, there's something not quite right. Are you okay? What's wrong? And the more you do that, and the more you have a conversation with somebody, the better you get at reading faces. And I think that's just something that I've just built up over time, and just taking an interest in people. I love people. I love people watching. I love talking to people. I love developing other people. It gives me so much joy to see how I can help somebody else develop. So I've lost count now, but I think it's in double figures of the number of assistant head teachers or deputy head teachers that have worked for me and are now head teachers. That gives me so much joy. And I'm reminded of in my first year of teaching, was it my second year of teaching? I can't really remember. But I was teaching this A-level physics lesson, and it became very, very clear that this 17-year-old, I think it was a year 13 class, 17-year-old knew more than his teacher. And I thought, right, okay, I'm going to deal with this. This guy knows more than I do. And I took him to one side and I said to him, I think it's brilliant that you know more than me. This is amazing. This is so, so cool. And he said, oh, sir, I was really embarrassed. I don't know what to say, because I do know more than you. And I was just delighted. And he's gone off to be a teacher as well. So it just got to I don't know. It's just opportunity. I think it's about opportunity, trying to find opportunity in everything. And again, another wise person said to me, just make the most of your opportunities. I remember when I was at university and I didn't have any money because I pissed it all up the wall, basically. I spent my whole grant in 4 weeks. I don't know what I was doing. So I had to find work. And one day I bought a travel card, central London. I bought a travel card and a hod and a shovel. And I got on the top deck of a bus and I looked for cranes around London. And where I saw a crane, I got off and I said, you need a hod carrier. No, back on the bus. By about 12 o'clock, I'd have a job earning some really, really good money. So I think then I learned about opportunity and putting yourself out there. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't work. There'll always be something else. So I think that's brought a level of calm to me, that opportunity sometimes finds you. You don't always have to go looking for it, but actually if you do put yourself out there, you'd be amazed at what comes back. It's not all going to work. Maybe one in 10 opportunities turn into something, but generally things will come.
Stuart, can we talk? You mentioned your children. And earlier on you said that you were let down by your dad and your stepdad, that they should have known better, that they should have done better. Your daughter recently came back from university and said, I want to be like you, Dad. Oh. Can you talk to us about your relationship with your kids then and now? Now that you're alcohol-free, but also, if you don't mind going into it, before when you were a drinker.
I'll try. And I'll try to keep composed, but already I can feel now a lump in my throat. And they mean the world to me. And what they say to me now about being proud of me is an unbelievable feeling. When your children say, Dad, I'm so proud of you, what you've achieved over this past 12 months. We don't want to talk about the past. We want to talk about now and we want to talk about the future. We are so proud of you and what you've done. We know how hard it must be. We see all the advertising around alcohol, and all we've ever known is people of your age spending quite a lot of time drinking. And I said, I know you don't want to talk about the past, but can you please tell me what I was like? And It's not nice listening. It's very much around you weren't present. You were different. You're quite difficult to talk to. You were never horrible, but you were a bit dopey. And actually, when you used to have parties at the house, we felt unsafe, and we felt if something ever happened to us, like we needed to go to hospital or something, there would be nobody to take us, because you'd all be drunk. And Izzy, my youngest, when she was 15, she sat at the dinner table and she was tears in her eyes, and I said, what's wrong? And she said, I don't like how much you two drink. And she talked about all of those things that I've just mentioned and how she feels. And she learns this stuff in school. There's the irony. I'm a science teacher. I've been teaching the dangers of drugs for 33 years, and there's me, total hypocrite. And it hit me really hard that this is how she feels, and it means she's really scared and she's really worried. And your role as a parent is not to make your children scared. Your role as a parent is not to make your children feel unsafe in their own home. That is not your role. In fact, it's the complete opposite of that. And so that was a really powerful message for me. And it became one of my whys very, very quickly. So there's all the personal whys, and then there's whys for other people. I don't think I'd ever say I'd stop drinking for anyone else. But for my children, yes, absolutely. And it's just amazing now. It's so, I've shared the posts with my eldest. I shared that one with her, and she was really emotional reading that post and saying how brilliant it is that we get to share this kind of stuff. So yeah, they're my biggest whys now. Apart from the fact I want a six pack like Niall, that's what I'm trying to get one of those.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. I've been out for three over 4 years now, mate, and still no clothes.
Got the one pack.
Was it Izzy that wrote you the card for your 6 months that you posted in the forum a while back?
Yes, yeah.
Can I just read some of that?
Do you mind? Please do. No, I don't mind.
Okay. T Daddy, happy birthday. I hope you have a lovely day celebrating this weekend and enjoy your prezzies and cooking. I want to say thank you for being the most amazing dad I could ask for. And I want you to know how incredibly proud I am of you for being alcohol-free for 6 months. You are so funny and always know how to make me laugh. And thank you so much for all the support you give me with maths and science, when you won't have to do that for much longer. I mean, how amazing is that?
It's wonderful, isn't it? You spend a lot of your time as a parent saying, I'm so proud of you for doing this. I'm so proud of you for trying this and trying that and try the other. When you hear that reversed, it makes you realize the influence and the impact you have on a young person that's in your care. For you to appreciate what words like that can mean to someone, I don't know how I could have a nicer feeling. I don't know how I could better that to receive that information. It's overwhelming, actually. And especially as, a typical bloke who probably hasn't necessarily dealt with emotions all that well, which is fairly, you know, if I'm going to be, you know, stereotypes are there for a reason, aren't they? Because it happens. There are a lot of blokes who don't deal with that kind of stuff. And to publicly shed a tear about that, it's kind of liberating as well, that actually this is okay and it feels great and it's raw and it's real and it's life and you feel better afterwards and you can share stuff. Yeah, it's great. And also, because of what my dad and my stepdad did, or rather didn't do, I am so determined that history will not repeat itself this way. Absolutely. You have a responsibility. It's a really serious responsibility, and you've got to take it seriously. And that's kind of what it is for me.
I could listen to you talk about the impact on your family and in particular your daughters for hours and hours and hours, because Stuart, over the last 12 months we've chatted, haven't we? We've been on Zoom calls together, and I think we're connected in many ways, because obviously I've got children and, you know, my drinking had an impact on them, my daughter in particular. And I just remember when, and it's what Ben has just shared, when your daughter did that on your birthday, and I think you shared it on a Zoom call, and I was like, oh, this is too much. This is too much. Because, you know, as drinkers, as parents, and it's a theme that comes up a lot, oh, they don't notice, you know, how I can get away with this. And it's absolute rubbish. It's the impact it can have on children without you even realizing, it's massive. But on the flip side of that, and looking forward and the positives, the impact of you not drinking as a parent, well, it's phenomenal, isn't it? And you've heard that from your own children.
Yeah, and I'm so much more invested in them and their lives now. Even you know, being taxi driver on a Friday night at silly o'clock, I don't mind, because I get to see them. Neither of them drink, by the way, and they're both absolutely determined not to drink. Catherine's just come back from 6 weeks at York University. She's been to every party going and hasn't had a drop. But listening to them and their lives and being able to take it all in and being able to remember it all and then being able to quote it a couple of weeks later, that's coming back to what I was saying about active listening. That is active listening. And when somebody knows that you've been listening to them and you're really interested in them, it just builds that relationship all the time. And it's so much more fun not saying, who's that friend of yours? Who's so-and-so? You know, I know all their friends' names. I know what they do. I know what the courses they do. And it's just fascinating to hear about their lives. And why did I ever think that that wasn't an important thing? I don't know. Perhaps I don't think I did think it wasn't an important thing. But when you're drinking, there's so much other stuff clouding your mind, and then the horrible noise of a hangover, you can't listen to anything else. You just can't listen to anything else. And I just do not miss hangovers in one tiny. Every morning I wake up now, I am joyful that I haven't got a hangover, and I hope that feeling never disappears.
Even the morning after we did Scarfell Pike in March, and it was hammering it down with rain and then hail, and I looked at you, Stuart, and you know, it was slippy on the top. There was a point where you slipped over on the ice, and I looked into your eyes and thought, this is such a shame, because I've really enjoyed getting to know this man on the way up, and now I'm never going to see him ever again. There is no chance that he's coming back. Even that morning, the next day, did you still feel happy and grateful to be alcohol-free and a part of OTI?
I didn't. So perhaps that's the one day that I didn't. And the two words in Scar fell. Scarred, yes, I was scarred. And fell, I fell quite a lot. I mean, I lived in Cumbria for 4.5 years. I've done those mountains. I've never done Scarfell before. I used to think I was quite good at hiking and climbing. But I just had a knee operation. So 3 months after a knee operation, I'd had the worst night's sleep ever in that godforsaken place of a campsite. The wind was howling all night long. My tent was flat on my face. The tent was flat on my face. I had no sleep. There was water coming in. I was grumpy before I even started. I slipped and I was out of shape. I was overweight. I was grumpy. I was probably the most grumpy I've ever been on a mountain. And I love going up a mountain. And that was also another lesson to me. So, and I said to myself, is this what you want? Is this what you want for the rest of your life? No. I had blood coming out my elbows. I drove all the way home. I should have had another night on the campsite.
This is not going well for OTI Outdoor Adventures.
It was such a leveler, Shaz. Honestly, it was such a leveler. I was like, you think you're something you're not, don't you? And this mountain has taught you a lesson. It was dreadful. But I'm going to do them all next year if I can. I think I might have time next year to do them all. That'll be great.
Get the training in, and you'll be flying.
I'm going to come and beat that mountain, definitely.
Amazing. Stuart, time is against us. And it has just been one of those episodes where I feel like myself and Ben have just been able to sit back and listen. And I know it's been the case for our community members as well. Final question. How would you sum up the last 12 months?
Gosh, I want to say life-changing, but it's more life-affirming, actually. I've met some lovely, lovely people through OTI, some that I just know are going to be friends for life. I've had some amazing inspiration from OTI. I have rediscovered the things that I love doing, and it's blissful. And I know it's been hard, and I know I'm not there yet, and I know it's only a year, but I am so looking forward to year two, year three, year four. And I want to come back and say to you, year two, year three, year four. And it's been even better. So it's been incredible. Thank you for what you do, Shaz and Ben. I think one thing you didn't read out in one of my posts was note to Shaz and Ben that your work is really, really important and your work changes lives. It does. So thank you so much for everything you do. And I know I speak on behalf of so, so many people that think the same way about what OTI is giving them. I know you will say, oh, it's not us. You facilitate this and you make it happen. And I can see hearts arriving all over the screen at the moment from various people that agree with me. So if we're going to end there, I'm going to say thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for what you do. It's changed me, not changed me, it's refound me. I've rediscovered the real me that I've been hiding for so long. So thank you.
The life-affirming magic of quitting alcohol, yeah. Stop drinking, start living.
Not
by
changing the title now. It's
Stuart
got to
Reeves
it's got
out.
To print.
By Stuart Reeves out on the 2nd of January, yeah. 2026. Order it now from your local independent bookshop. It's
amazing.
Quicker than Amazon.
You could be my ghostwriter, Shaz.
Oh, I'm never writing another book again. Anyway. Stuart, it's been an absolute pleasure. Ben, note to self, this is going in the diary because I run the podcast diary. Catch up with Stuart Reeves, 30th of October 2025, because we want to find out where the hell you are up to in year two. Stuart, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thank you.